You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Courts in both Colorado and Minnesota are hearing cases this week over separate lawsuits to disqualify former President Donald Trump from appearing on the 2024 presidential ballots in those states. Both cases revolve around the 14th Amendment, which has a clause that prevents candidates from running for office if they engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the Constitution after having taken an oath of office. The plaintiffs are arguing that the former president's involvement in the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol makes him ineligible to appear on the ballot next year. Attorneys for Trump say he didn't engage in insurrection and that the courts at the state level would overstep the separation of powers by disqualifying a candidate from a national election. Both cases are expected to be decided by early January and are likely to be appealed, may end up all in the U.S. Supreme Court. Our next guest conducted a legal analysis of the arguments in the case and is here to help us understand each side. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been following this line of argument? Do you think Trump should be kept off of ballots based on the 14th Amendment? Why or why not? Should a similar case come up in Wisconsin? Do you have questions for our legal expert? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. David Schultz is a professor of political science at Hamline University and professor of law at the University of Minnesota. He's the author of several books on politics and law, including Trumpism, American Politics, and the Age of Politainment. David, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me again. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Before we get into the specific cases in your state, David, and in Colorado, let's talk about this bigger argument. Now, there's a buzz. A couple conservative legal scholars wrote this big piece considering this clause in the 14th Amendment saying, yeah, it does apply today and it applies to former President Trump. Can you talk us through the outline of this argument?
Sure. And what the two legal scholars do is to engage in, as you indicated here, they went back and looked at this Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, and you more or less paraphrased it on the air. And their argument is that, first, that this clause was not written just to apply to the circumstances of the Civil War, but that it has an enduring life even to this day. Second, even though the clause doesn't specifically refer to the president of the United States, we could infer that it does apply to the president, or that the clause essentially amends the qualifications to be president of the United States. Three, that in applying it to the contemporary situation, what happened on January 6, 2021 is insurrection, and therefore, as a result of that, that if Trump engaged in insurrection, if this clause still has life today, if it applies to the president of the United States, their argument is that then election officials have a requirement, a duty to exclude Donald Trump from the ballot and prevent him from appearing on the ballot in 2024. Now, technically, what the insurrection clause says is that you're ineligible to hold office. But as the lawsuits in Colorado and in Minnesota, and I believe there's one in Michigan, and there's a pending one, I think possibly in Arizona, they're basically saying that also means ineligible to actually appear on the ballot. But that's sort of the core of their argument, that this clause written back in the 14th Amendment, again, during the Civil War, applies to Donald Trump to this day.
One of the phrases they use in that piece, I think, is self-enforcing, meaning that just like the requirement you have to be of a certain age to run for president and that you have to have American citizenship, there's nationality requirements. Right. They're saying same thing. This automatically applies if you're in violation of it. You're not eligible. It seems a lot trickier. It seems like there's a dicier argument there than you can just look at somebody's age on their birth certificate and say yay or nay. You can look at their citizenship and say yay or nay. This seems a lot more subtle.
It is subtle and more complicated. And if I can, and I know you're saying to speak to it more generally, and I will here, is that figuring out what we actually mean by an insurrection is a matter of debate. I mean, most people would concede and say what happened during the Civil War where the South seceded from the Union, that probably qualifies as an insurrection. And the whole goal back then was to prevent people who had served in Congress or in state legislatures, who then served the Confederacy, from coming back now and holding office in the United States, because they're concerned that what? They're not going to be loyal to the United States. So we have a whole bunch of stuff that probably worked back then. But in terms of self-executing right now or self-enforcing, it becomes more complicated to figure out, well, what do we mean by an insurrection? Who has the authority to keep Trump off the ballot? If you're going to rule that it's an insurrection, by what type of evidence? What evidence is admissible? If, for those of you who know some differences between civil and criminal law, is it a criminal law standard of evidence beyond a reasonable doubt? Is it civil in terms of preponderance of evidence? This is where it gets a lot trickier in terms of determining, is it self-enforcing? Is it and it's self-executing?
Talking to David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University of Law at the University of Minnesota, looking at this 14th Amendment argument in a couple state courts this very week, saying President Trump, former President Trump, should not be on ballots because of a clause in the 14th Amendment. You can join in with your thoughts, your opinions on this, or your questions about it at 800-642-1234. All right, David, let's head over to the Minnesota Supreme Court. Yesterday, one of former President Trump's attorneys, Nicholas Nicholson, made the argument that voters should decide whether Trump gets back into the White House, not the courts. Here's a listen.
Authority reflects an important reality about the purpose of the political question doctrine, which is to ensure that, obviously, political questions and judicial questions remain separate. Political decisions and judicial decisions remain separate. We think that's an important part of a healthy separation of powers. We think Oines reflects that. We think all the other cases reflect that. And we think the outcome should be the same here.
That's a concern, I think, not even just from critics of former President Trump, that this could be, if courts go along with this idea, a big intrusion of the courts into a political electoral process.
Yes. And I think what some people are concerned about is, take us back approximately 25 years ago to the U.S. Supreme Court decision in Bush v. Gore, where there was a dispute over vote counting in Florida in a presidential election, and the U.S. Supreme Court entered and it halted the vote count. And many people said that what the court did was wrong, that it essentially decided that George Bush was going to become president of the United States. And for a lot of people, there's this concern that it should be not the courts, but the people that get to decide who to be president of the United States. And in Thursday's oral arguments before the Minnesota Supreme Court, Chief Justice Hudson, I think, asked the most interesting question. And she turned to the attorneys representing the group that wanted to exclude Donald Trump. And she said, even if we as the courts have the authority to do this, should we do this? And she was echoing this point that Trump's attorney was making, is that when in doubt, the courts should not, this is her comment, or I'm paraphrasing it, when in doubt, courts shouldn't decide elections, let the people decide the elections, the outcome of who's going to become president of the United States. And that's and whether you like Trump or dislike Trump, that's a pretty powerful argument to say that we don't want judges picking presidents. We want what? We want the people to have a voice in here. And any decision, as you did in my intro here, any decision on the merits in Colorado or in Minnesota or elsewhere is likely to get it all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, where they might ultimately make a decision. Does Trump appear on the ballot or not appear on the ballot?
You mentioned the Chief Justice of Minnesota Supreme Court, Natalie Hudson. Here is the Chief Justice bringing up another concern about this case.
It does seem to me that you run square into the problem that Chief Justice Chase talked about in Griffin, where you have the potentiality of 50 different states who, depending on the nature of the statutes in those states, deciding this question differently, deciding whether states have the right to determine who's eligible for a national office. And that concerns me, that you have this possibility for, as Justice Chase said, for just chaos. So should we do it, even if we could do it and we can do it?
And she ended there on the bit that you mentioned earlier. But this issue of, okay, it's a federal election for president, but states administer elections. So here we are in state courts. I don't know. I'm confused about the venue a little bit here. Why should a bunch of different state courts be weighing in on this issue?
And that's exactly, I think, the concern that Justice Hudson had here. It's not just a separation of powers. It's a federalism issue at the end of the day. So what if Minnesota and Colorado and, let's say, Michigan throw Trump off the ballot, but other courts reach a different conclusion? We have this kind of patchwork quilt going on here in terms of each different state saying he's eligible or not eligible, he's an insurrectionist or not. And I know the attorneys trying to get Trump off the ballot said, well, the U.S. Supreme Court is going to eventually resolve this issue if we get enough different opinions here. But still, it does raise this kind of concern that should we let, I don't know, the state of Minnesota make a decision that could have an impact for the entire country of the United States? I know Minnesota and Wisconsin are neighbors, and outside of our sports rivalry, you know, we actually are very close in terms of states here. But I'm not sure Wisconsin wants Minnesota deciding who's going to be president of the United States or are making decisions that are going to impact the voters in Wisconsin.
We're talking to political science and law professor David Schultz about lawsuits in Colorado and Minnesota and some on the way elsewhere, aiming to keep former President Trump off of presidential ballots in those states in 2024, based on an argument from a provision in the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of this notion? Good idea? Bad idea? What do you worry about? What do you hope for? What is confusing you about this? If you're confused about something, you're not alone on this, I'm guessing. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up next on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We continue our talk with David Schultz, political science professor at Hamline University, law professor at the University of Minnesota, with us today to look at the legal arguments and lawsuits going on this week in Minnesota and Colorado, others on the way that aim to disqualify former President Trump from the 2024 presidential ballots in those states based on a clause in the 14th Amendment. Let's go to your calls at 800-642-1234. Tom is with us in Milwaukee. Tom, hi.
Hi, I'd like to ask your guests. My impression is that these lawsuits have been filed by conservative groups. I think the assumption would be that they would be Democratic groups that would be trying to prevent Trump from running again. So is there any particular reason for that?
Tom, thanks for the call. David, my understanding is it is a mix of voters in some cases. Some are Republicans. As we mentioned, some conservative legal scholars advanced this idea. A conservative guru type judge, J. Michael Luttig, has spoken out in favor of this 14th Amendment interpretation. This isn't just, I guess, a liberal conservative argument.
You're absolutely correct. That the two professors who wrote this, I actually know one of them. One of them is one of my former teachers, Michael Stokes Paulson, is quite conservative, but it's been sort of picked up by a variety of different groups. The coalition that is bringing the lawsuit in Minnesota is a supposedly bipartisan group. It's composed of a former Secretary of State in Minnesota who was a Democrat, a former Justice on the Minnesota Supreme Court, who was a Republican. And so if we look at across the country, it really is an interesting coalition that's bringing these suits that, for a variety of political reasons, both, let us say, Democrats and liberals and some in the Republican Party who are not supportive and don't like Donald Trump, they're kind of coming together here to bring these kind of lawsuits.
Tom, thanks for the call. Christopher joins us now in Fitchburg. Christopher, hi.
Hi. You said, I think, several times that why should Minnesota be deciding for, like, say, Wisconsin, who the president could be? But they're not, right? They're just deciding who in Minnesota is on the ballot, which, and in Colorado or the other states, which are likely to be Democratic-leaning states anyway.
Christopher, thanks for the call. Yeah, if the state court in Minnesota said no Trump on the ballot, that might not affect the outcome of the election nationally at all, potentially.
It might not affect it, although there becomes interesting questions here in terms of, he's right, Minnesota and Colorado are likely to go Democrat. Why might they want to do this if you're a group that wants to keep them off your, let's say, a Democratic leading group? Well, if you don't have to really worry about defending Minnesota, can you now shift some of your resources over to the state of Wisconsin? And therefore, Wisconsin being much more of a swing state than Minnesota, that and so I think tactically that's going on here in terms of what's happening. I should also mention one other thing here. Is, and I think Justice Hudson and some of the other justices mentioned it also yesterday in the oral arguments. Even though right now it looks like Donald Trump is going to get the nomination for the Republican Party or is in the lead, we still have a long way to go. I mean, who knows what's going to happen in the next 6 months? Maybe Nikki Haley, maybe Tim Scott, maybe somebody catches fire. Maybe he doesn't get the nomination. Maybe all the lawsuits, all the criminal inquiries against him, there's convictions, things could change. And so I just mentioned this also because there are a lot of things that could change. And I think Minnesota was concerned about are we just not ripe? Are we just not there to even have this conversation? But I do think that what happens even in safe states or relatively safe states like Minnesota in that mean it has an impact in terms of resource shifting and campaign strategy, including in states like Wisconsin.
Thanks for the call, Christopher. Brad joins us now in Wild Rose. Brad, hi.
Hey.
What did you want to bring up, Brad?
Say, I just wanted to make a comment. I think that, you know, if Trump truly did do something that, you know, would be illegal enough to take him off the ballot, I think that should be done in every state.
Brad, thanks a lot for the call. That is the argument, I think, obviously, from the people bringing these cases, David.
It is exactly. And I think in part what they're hoping is that if they get, let's say, a favorable ruling in Colorado or Minnesota, that the case eventually gets it all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court and the U.S. Supreme Court and agrees with them. There was a conference at the University of Minnesota earlier this week, and some law professors were speculating. Now, I don't agree with their speculation. They were thinking, oh, there are maybe 4 or 5 votes on the U.S. Supreme Court right now to keep them off the ballot nationwide. Well, I don't believe that. I think that was just sort of kind of, you know, idle chatter. But I think that's the hope. Get a favorable ruling in a sympathetic court. Now, I should also point out that one of the concerns that some of us have expressed about this is that, remember, Donald Trump's narrative from 4 years ago or 3 years ago is stolen election. What would happen if he's actually thrown off the ballot in a Colorado or in a Minnesota? Doesn't this feed into the narrative of Trump that somebody's trying to steal the election? And I wonder right now if these lawsuits can backfire in terms of both giving cogency to his argument and maybe mobilizing even more some of his supporters.
Thanks a lot for that call, Brad. And you did a presentation on this very issue. You shared the slides with us, and one of the phrases that stands out to me here is policy and political considerations weigh against exclusion of the former president. Can you talk about that a little more?
Sure. A variety of things. One I just mentioned here, mm-hmm. the policy consideration or political consideration of the backfire, you know, by the very fact that the lawsuits are being brought, is it not feeding into Trump's narrative about stolen elections? The policy consideration I talked a little bit about before also in terms of, do we really want courts at the end of the day to make decisions about who's going to be able to eligible for president? But then I'm also wondered about a political tit for tat that, let's say, Minnesota or Colorado throws Trump off the ballot. What if now some group challenges, and again, we're going to presume for the sake of argument, challenges Joe Biden's candidacy and says that something he did, and I don't know what it is, something that he did makes him an insurrectionist and therefore tries to pressure to get him off the ballot. That becomes, I think, one of the considerations too in terms of, does this set a dangerous precedent for perhaps playing this larger, I don't know, what are they going to call it, tit for tat, cat and mouse game, whatever it may be. So for a variety of reasons, when I did this presentation before the State Bar Association the other day, we were raising a lot of these questions in terms of legally, does this clause even apply to this day? There's a lot of legal historians, and remember, I'm not a historian, but I defer to legal historians. A lot of legal historians that say, this was written really to address the Civil War, not to this. And then even after we get past the legal issues, it is these policy and political considerations that we have to think about.
Time for one more quick call. Joe is with us in Platteville. Joe, hi.
Yeah, your guest just hit on what I was calling about. This was designed for the Civil War to keep the old Confederates out of the Congress. They tried to join in their old uniforms and everything, and it got everybody all ticked off. And we've really, as I understand it, have talked about it in courts in such a way that it, or interpreted it, that it's not even usable anymore.
Joe, thanks a lot for the call. In our last few moments, David, you were just hinting at that. There's certainly not universal agreement that this thing would still apply.
You're absolutely correct here. Again, I remind people I'm a lawyer, I'm a law professor, I'm a political scientist, not a PhD in history, not an expert on this, but I did a lot of reading and consulted some of the best books and historians out there, and they're not convinced that this applies to this day, that as a caller just called in and said, that this was about the unique circumstances of the Civil War, as the caller just indicated, and maybe this doesn't even apply at all.
Joe, thanks for the call. And David, thanks again for joining us today.
My pleasure always, and thank you to the audience for calling in.
That's David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University, of law at the University of Minnesota. Talked to him today about lawsuits in Minnesota and Colorado. More to come, it looks like, that argue former President Trump should be disqualified from the 2024 presidential election based on a clause in the post-Civil War 14th Amendment to the Constitution.